Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And hello to you, the listener. I am your host today, Jim Werbel, and today's show focuses on food topics and events in Ames. We begin the show talking with Sang King, a PhD student who's teaching the Fine Dining Event Management course at ISU, and Shane Brewer, a senior at ISU who is taking this course. We'll be learning about the fine dining dinners that the ISU students will be presenting to the public over the next month. I am then giving a news update on the fall mushroom season, following up an earlier show. Then Marg Junkin will be joining us. She is the owner of Cook's Emporium, and she will be talking about her business. Finally, we have Mary Rankin back for her monthly report on sustainability. Today, she is wearing her hat as the City of Ames Sustainability Coordinator and talking about the City of Ames Smart Business Challenge. Joining her in this segment are Ebby Brown and Drew Lilicano, who are seniors at ISU and helping her as interns in the Smart Business Challenge. Yes, even this topic has a food element. So stay tuned and learn more about food in Ames. Bon appetit. To start the show, I am pleased to have Sang King, an instructor at ISU, who's teaching the Fine Dining Event Management course at ISU, and Shane Brewer, who's a senior taking that course. They will be talking about the four fine dining opportunities that are open to the public that ISU students in this course will be staging. Welcome to the show, Sang and Shane.
Nice to meet you.
What is the course Fine Dining Event Management, Sang?
Fine dining event management is the student, they develop the menu and they choose the theme and they develop the menu and they set up the goal for the events and we sell the food to the public and it's the main purpose of the fine dining class.
So what do you hope students will learn from this course, Sang?
Through this course, students will develop creative experience with U.S. regional and international foods. As the capstone course, the student will apply what they have learned to the course from menu planning to table services, including marketing and wine service as well.
They're really learning everything about being owning a restaurant, basically.
Yes, right.
And presenting food or working with a restaurant.
Yes, right, exactly.
What is your experience as a chef?
Yes, similar to other chefs, I started from the dishwasher. And originally, I'm from South Korea, so I finished the military service as a cook. And I came to the United States, and I graduated the Culinary Institute of America in New York, and I work at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Sarasota, the state of Florida. And also, I work at the Grand Cayman Island, the same company. And I work as the chef over there, and I work at the Asian restaurant as the chef, head chef.
Lots of experience that you can share, and you've been training people under you for a long time in the art of fine food management.
Yes. Also, during last summer vacation, I worked as the task force chef at the Ritz-Carlton, the Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I also have that kind of experience.
Shane, what do you hope to learn from this course?
Well, I hope to learn that basically every aspect of fine dining or just running a restaurant, there's so much more than just the cooking and the serving of the food. There's the, the costing out. There's the planning and the development of recipes. So being able to learn everything from the development of the recipes to actually executing the actual dinner itself is kind of what I would hope to get out of this experience.
You're a male. Is it common for males to be in culinary science?
As far as culinary science, it's actually more of a female-driven field because it's actually pretty new. And the world of culinary itself, it's actually been mostly male-driven for years and years and years. But lately, over the past, I don't know, probably 20 years or so, females have started to come into the industry very strongly because of their background in the olden days when they used to be at home, stay-at-home moms. And so they brought that passion of home cooking into the restaurants. And so it's opened up a whole new field of style of, you know, restaurants and cooking. But then they also are some of the best chefs, can be some of the best chefs in the world. So they have just as much ability as a male does in this industry.
That's true. Kind of on the TV shows, a lot of those head chefs are males. Not all, but many are. So
right.
Saying, can you tell us what four meals are being planned over the next month or so?
Yes. Our first event will start from the October 28th. And the theme of the event is the French cuisine. And the next one is we are going to have November 4th. And the following the event in November 11th and November 18th. And, we have four events from October 28th to November 18th. So, as the first theme is, as I said, it's the French cuisine and the South American cuisine, Asian fusion cuisine, and the American cuisine.
Thank you. Which meal are you planning, Shane?
I'm actually the American meal cuisine, which is actually inspired by the city of Portland, Oregon.
Tell me what's on the menu. Do I want to go to this thing?
So we're doing a five-course meal. So we're doing an appetizer, soup, salad, entree, and dessert. So for an appetizer, we are doing a kimchi crostini. And a kimchi is basically fermented vegetables. We just do a very quick fermentation on it, so it's still nice and crisp and not too overpowering. For the soup, we're doing a wild mushroom bisque, which is nice thick soup, very creamy, very velvety, very rich. For the salad, we are doing a roasted beet carpaccio, which is a playoff of beef carpaccio. Instead of the beef, it's roasted beets, but then the rest of it's the same with arugula, a little bit of walnut, a little bit of goat cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the entree is something a little bit different than what most people expect, which is a crispy braised pork belly. And so it's a dish that was inspired by Gordon Ramsay, something he cooked for his family. And it was actually something that's very, very big right now in Portland with the new wave cuisine. So it's slow braised for about 2.5 hours and a little bit of chicken stock. And then it's reduced. The top gets really nice and crisp while the bottom gets nice and tender and just kind of falls apart. And then that's served with a roasted vegetable medley. And then finally for dessert, we are doing a kind of play off of apple pie. So we're doing an apple pie spice donut with a apple cider sorbet. And then we're topping it with an apple slaw with a little bit of bourbon.
A donut. Where did the idea of the donut come from?
The donut actually came from one of the most iconic restaurants in Portland, which is called Voodoo Donuts. It's a big tourist attraction for the city of Portland, and they're known for creating kind of off-the-wall, out-of-the-box donuts, coating things in like Captain Crunch and Fruit Loops. So the idea for just going out there and doing something really weird kind of came from them.
You really are trying to imitate mm-hmm. things that if we could go to a food taste of town, these are things we would be probably eating in the city of Portland.
Exactly. And so it's about when you go to a restaurant, you want to be transported somewhere. And so the idea is that we're trying to transport you to the city of Portland without actually having to go there.
Interesting. I know Portland has a lot of good food in that town. It's a good choice. I like that. How did you get into culinary science? What's your background? Why did you choose that as a major?
So both my parents actually work in the hospitality industry. My dad works as a manager for a major grocery chain back in St. Louis, where I'm from. And then my mom is a nutritionist and actually works for a school district. So for me, it was a pretty easy kind of road for me to get into it because I've been doing it for so long. I actually have family members that actually own restaurants in Delaware. So since I was, 12 or 13, I've been kind of in and out of restaurants, doing different things, catering. So I kind of experienced a whole bunch of fields throughout my life. So it's just a natural course for me, and it's just something I really enjoy.
Sounds interesting. So What other meals are being planned, Sang? Can you tell me anything else about the other meals yet?
Yes. We also have three other groups. And the first group, the day before yesterday, we finished the menu testing, and they are still finalizing the final menu. Mm-hmm. And the first group, they are thinking about the chicken kokoban because their theme is the French cuisine. Mm-hmm. And also South American cuisine, they are thinking about they are going to use the beef short rib.
Okay.
So, and the final one is the Asian cuisine, they are thinking about the scallops. Using scallops.
So seafood lovers might want to think about that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I suspect they'll all be full menus, very similar to what Shane was saying, rich and varied with lots of different, with about 4 to 5 different courses.
Yes, it's a 5-course.
5-course meal. Yeah. Is wine being served with the meal?
Yes, wine will be served. And also, we are going to serve 2 different types of wines, the white wine and the red wine. Yes.
Oh, okay. How does the public make reservations for these meals?
I think the Shane can introduce the email and the phone number.
Right. So for the French cuisine, you're going to send an email to Zaida. And her email address, probably the best way to contact her, is ZHHIDAH, and then it's at iastate.edu. For the South American cuisine, you're going to contact Gia, and it is, her email address is jiajial@iastate.edu. And then for the Asian fusion, you're going to contact Yishi, and her email address is shiyiyi@iastate.edu. And then for my fine dining event, you're going to contact Brandy. And Brandy's email address is bwilkins, W-I-L-K-I-N-S, @iastate.edu.
Let me quickly explain a little bit why this is a little bit different than just calling a number, because the students are presenting it themselves, and they are responsible for making the reservations, and that's a part of what you have to do when you're doing fine dining events. So if you really are interested, I suggest you go to our streaming website and listen to this segment of the show on the streamed show if you're really interested, or you can just simply call Iowa State, the Department of Hospitality, management, and I'm certain they'll give you the contact information for any of these 4 meals. We've been talking to Sang Kang, an instructor for the ISU Fine Event Management Dining course, and Shane Brewer, student in that course, about the 4 upcoming fine dining events that students are presenting. Any final comments, both of you?
I think so.
Yes, we post the advertisement on the newspapers and also through the school, the bulletin board. Mm-hmm. So some events already have overbooked. So please make hurry, right? To make a reservation.
And if you are too late for the one this year, remember it's always about this time of year, and you can always make reservations each year. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next is the question. Rich gentlemen having
My next guest is March Junkin, who is the owner of Cook's Emporium on Main Street in Ames. I am trying to increase business coverage, and as business events are an important element in the city of Ames, and they have some important stories to tell. Let's listen to her story about her business. I'd like to welcome Mark Junkin, who's the owner of Cook's Emporium, to the show today on Local Talk. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you, Jim.
You own Cook's Emporium, do you not?
Yes, that's correct.
Tell us how you started the business.
Well, I started quite a long time ago. I had been teaching adult ed classes in French cooking and other types of cooking up at the high school when adult ed was offered. And there seemed to be a great interest in cooking and having the proper equipment for cooking. Now, sometimes, of course, you can substitute other things, but people were becoming really interested in things of that type back then. And cooking was becoming a definite trend in this country, not just, you know, throwing stuff together. And it was the time of Julia Child, and who was a great influence on the cooking scene at that time.
Yes, she was.
And I had the feeling that Ames was probably at that time big enough and had enough potential customers that a store like mine could be profitable.
How did you get interested in French cooking at an age when Julia Child was just starting? You were probably interested before that.
I was, actually. Yes, she helped me in my learning because before that, it was very difficult to learn very much about French cooking. But I liked to cook, and it was, you know, I guess always an interest of mine. And French cooking was what was in. It was good. Everybody felt that that was the way to go. If you were having a French meal, it was the thing to do. And so I was sort of self-taught for a long time. Then I did live in Brussels, which is French. Well, it's Belgian. Yeah. It is French culture primarily there. And I attended a cooking class there for a while.
How long?
Oh, I think I went all year. It was one of those once
Whoa.
A week. It wasn't intense. It was aimed at housewives. I went once a week for, you know, a period of, say, 6 weeks, and then there'd be a break, and then you'd have another 6 weeks of class. And that was very, very interesting to me, and I learned a lot.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm.
So your business was really about sharing your passion with more people then.
Exactly, yes. No, my business is my passion. Yes, you're right. Cooking nowadays isn't so much French cooking as it is world cooking. There's all sorts of different cuisines that are, 1 year something is in, the next year it's something else. But on the whole, I would say that people are interested in different types of food. Right now, the farm-to-table movement is big. Everybody wants food that's locally raised and doesn't come from miles and miles away, but comes from an actual farmer that may be, you know, in your, shall we say, neighborhood.
Tell me about what you do in your business to make people passionate about cooking.
We have cooking demonstrations every Saturday morning, and each week is something different. They last about an hour, and, you know, you're still free to come and go as you wish because we know that people are busy on Saturday mornings. They have other activities going.
So what are some recent classes you've had?
See, last week was appetizers, and different people do these, and each person, of course, has their own take on certain things and how they like to do things and techniques for doing things, too.
Mm-hmm. So it's more than recipe, but it's well, it's cooking techniques like
right.
how to deal with,
say, pie crust.
Yeah.
Yeah, which a lot of people find difficult. Last week was appetizers. This coming week is a meatloaf with a Reuben flavor. And we also have some evening classes that are hands-on classes. The Saturday mornings are primarily demonstrations. You sit, you watch, and you go home and do it.
So if I'm doing something wrong on an evening class, I get feedback about how to do something
right.
With a little different style, a little different technique. What would you say you're trying to do with the entire store? What is your goal that you're trying to achieve?
Obviously, to make a profit. One has to do that, too, to stay in business. But by doing that, why... We provide things that people find a need for, that make their life more interesting, that tasks in the kitchen are more easily done, ways of coping with things that they may be having problems with doing, getting them motivated to maybe cook in a more healthy direction and try new foods, tried different ways of preparing old foods. I've found that a lot of people that say, well, they don't like something or other, they've never had it prepared properly.
Give me an example. Let's talk about liver. That's usually one that most people don't like.
Most people overcook it so that it's hard, especially older people like myself, because we were all brought up in the era when meat had to be well done.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't – they cook all the – which gives it a bad texture. If you make it into, say, a liver pate, you may like it. I remember my daughter once when she was a little bitty girl happened to be in the kitchen one day when I was making a liver pate, and she loved this stuff. And she looked at it, and she saw the liver, the chicken liver sitting there, and she said, Mom, you aren't putting liver in your liver pate, are you? And I said, but that's what it is. And so because she liver just as liver, mm-hmm. she didn't like.
Yeah, it has a bad reputation.
Very bad reputation. And so people, you know, if you grew up in a family where Mom doesn't like it, Dad doesn't like it, and they make disparaging remarks about it, why, you aren't going to like it either. Another woman in one of my classes once, we were doing cauliflower. And cauliflower isn't always the most favorite either. And when we were done that night, she said, oh, my gosh, I've got to call my mother tonight and tell her I ate cauliflower and it was good. Because, of course, I'm sure when she was growing up, her mother wanted to eat more vegetables and things of that type. Parents always seem to do that.
Well, you don't make much money on your cooking classes. They kind of operate themselves. What do you make money on?
Oh, we make money on when we sell product. Got to have a good pan. You've really got to have good equipment. Too many people chintz. Well, a lot of it, of course, is a budget problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say college students are not our market, but the young adults who now have professional jobs or jobs of some sort are our market, because they're setting up their own households, their own apartments, and coming to the place in their life where they need to prepare their own food. Mom isn't going to be around to do it, and so they need a good knife, a good peeler, a good pan to cook their eggs in the morning.
What's the matter with an aluminum pan? It does the job. Why is the other one better?
Well, it kind of depends on what you're cooking. You said aluminum pan. In general, there are certain things that do just fine in an aluminum pan. Other things, like acidic foods, like tomatoes and things, don't do that well. You sometimes get kind of an off flavor. Every once in a while, you will see a recipe that says, ask for a non-reactive pan, meaning either non-stick or stainless steel or something that's not going to react with an acidic food. And it's usually a recipe that has milk in it or tomatoes or something like that.
What are the types of questions that people come to you when they're buying products? Give me some examples of different types of questions that you may get
well,
asked.
Well, talking about pans, they may ask, okay, now which one of these is better? And I said, well, what are you going to cook in it? Because it may be just, a nonstick pan is the one you want for eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Because eggs tend to stick. For something else, a stainless steel pan may work better. If you want meat to brown up, nonstick doesn't necessarily work that well.
What do you like being on Main Street?
Main Street is, as far as retail businesses are concerned, I think it's the place to be.
Really? Why?
People enjoy coming down to Main Street. We've got a lot of things going on, and no, we aren't open until midnight every day, like they are.
Yes.
Or all night, as many of them now are.
Right.
We do.
So if you need a spatula in the middle of the night for whatever, to make your chocolate brownies,
that's right. If you need a spatula at midnight, we are not going to be there, no. But if you plan ahead a little bit and say, I think I might need a spatula for those brownies, any normal business hours we're there. And, of course, closer to the holidays, then we'll start being open a little bit longer in the day, and we're open Sunday afternoons, too.
What types of changes do you see making in the future for your business?
I think keeping up with what's new is always the most important thing. We always go to the houseware show in Chicago every spring,
okay.
Which is where companies introduce new products, improvements on old products, different ways of doing different things, new lines of pans, things of that type. You see things that you think you know, your customers might like to have or might enjoy.
Staying current in the cooking
business. Staying current in the cooking business,
which,
yes.
Well, which you don't know until it happens.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me summarize some things. So, number one, you are passionate about cooking. It's been a passion of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you see your business as a way to share your passions with other people who have similar passions or trying to get people to get more excited about things, even like cooking cauliflower.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you try to educate people about cooking, new things. And to help do that, sometimes you encourage them to buy new products that will help them make that food the way that they would like it to be made.
Yes. And in some cases, they've already identified the need. We do sell a lot of items as gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
wedding seasons.
Wedding gifts, birthday gifts, holiday gifts, Christmas and other holiday gifts.
We've been talking to Marg Junkin, who's the owner of Cook's Emporium. Do you have any final comments you'd like to share with us, Mark?
I guess just, stop in and see what's new sometimes.
Thank you for coming to the show, Mark. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio, 89.1 FM, serving Ames and Story City. I am your host today, Jim Werbel, and it's time for the Fall Mushroom Report. As you may have remembered, a previous show we had tuning into agriculture, so I'm going to give a quick fall mushroom report. And oh my gosh, has this been a year of chicken of the woods. I've picked over 50 pounds and have heard others doing likewise. Chicken is a burnt orange shelf mushroom with a bright yellow underside, no gills. Given the color, many people think it's poison, but it's not. It tastes like chicken, hence the name, and it grows in every city park. The hirsutum has done well, too. It grows on dead log. It's brilliant white like coral mushroom. It really looks just like coral. If you saw it, you'd say, that looks like coral. I love to cook them and almost hate to pick them because they look so beautiful, but I make a mock crab cake with them that is exceptionally tasty. Do not pick the coral ones that grow on the ground. Puffballs. Well, anybody knows about puffballs, but there are actually two types. The big white ones that many of you know about that grow on the ground, and then there's the smaller ones that are with light brown exteriors that grow on dead wood. They mature quickly. I always seem to get there the day after they are no longer white inside. I much prefer the smaller brown ones. They're great in soups and have more of a umami essence. As long as they are white inside, no gills, they're good to eat. If not white, well, avoid them. You can still head out, especially after any recent rain, till the first frost, which may be happening very soon. So today you might be able to head out as well as Saturday because there are lots of moisture in mushrooms, and once it freezes, it pretty much kills them. So anyhow, enjoy the fall mushroom season. Our next guest will be Mary Rankin, who's back for her show on sustainability. Today, she's wearing her City of Ames hat as sustainability coordinator and talking about the Smart Business Challenge. She has two students with her who are interns and seniors at ISU and working on her with this project. They are Ebby Brown and Drew Loyacano. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Ebby, can you tell me what the Smart Business Challenge is?
Absolutely. So last year, the City of Ames celebrated its sesquicentennial, and the Smart Business Challenge was an initiative created by the city to kind of commemorate that milestone in the city's history. It's basically an initiative formulated to save the city money and businesses money by encouraging them to participate in opportunities to operate more sustainably.
City of Ames sponsoring this?
Yes.
Okay. So they're concerned about the environment. Are they? Well, they have a sustainability coordinator, don't they, Mary?
I hope they're concerned.
How did this project evolve, Mary?
Well, Ebby mentioned that it really grew out of the city's 150 celebration last year. But really, it started before that as well. So when I first started in my shared role with the city, we convened a sustainability task force. The task force included and represented all the different sectors that we have in the community, the business sector being one of them. And so each sector brought together a subcommittee. They came up with goals and objectives and action items they thought would be particularly helpful based upon the challenges that sector has, the opportunities they feel they have, and the resources they feel they need. And one of the things was offering more opportunities for businesses related to learning more about how to be more sustainable, highlighting and celebrating the things that businesses were already doing, and just really form a specific initiative around sustainability in businesses. And so as those recommendations have come forward, what we've done in years after the task force came up with those objectives is we've looked at different opportunities to be able to include things like that. And when the 150 year came up last year, we actually thought, how about a smart 150 business challenge? The initial goal was to get 150 businesses. We got about 10%, so there's plenty of room to grow.
Interesting. So it's been a challenge to get businesses to sign up. What's the problem? Why are businesses not willing to be more sustainable?
Well, I don't think it has to do anything, honestly, with businesses wanting to be more sustainable, because what we've found out is businesses are really doing a lot of sustainability things now. It makes good business sense. It helps them to better serve their customers and give their customers a better product and a better service. It's all about time. And so as we started continuing to evolve and maturing this initiative, we came up with the idea that businesses really need someone to assist them with that time commitment, which is how these two interns came to be. We started with interns last year. We've continued now with this year with Drew and Ebby. And that seems to make an incredible difference for businesses, having someone to come in and really offer that assistance.
So you think having people help people go through the boxes and the bureaucracy a little bit to get it, it seems to will help that. And I've heard that you've got a couple of new businesses signed up for it this year.
We do. And in fact, you know, we've tried to work with businesses to get that feedback to better improve the program. But we do have a couple of really exciting businesses that have recently joined, and then another that we've been working with for a while that we've come back on board with. And so Drew and Ebby can probably talk more about them, because they have been really the motivation and the impetus and the spark behind getting those businesses up and running in the program.
Eager to hear that just in a little bit. Drew, please explain the different levels of business involvement in the Smart Business Challenge.
Yeah, so when you join the Smart Business Challenge, the first level you go to is green. That just shows that you're a participant. You're making an effort to become more sustainable in the community. We then give you a checklist. You go through and you check off all these boxes. The first level you can reach is bronze level. That is just implementing awareness programs, telling your employees how to become more sustainable, telling customers what you're doing, stuff like that. You then move up to silver, which is making those awareness programs a priority and implementing sustainable practices wherever possible. The next level after that is gold, and that is making all those practices requirements within your business. That's writing them into handbooks, training manuals, employee training guides, all that sorts of stuff. And the highest level you can reach is actually platinum. And that is when you go above and beyond expectations, doing things that people normally would not do to become more sustainable.
This is there's quite a range. There's some that are very low involvement, and there's some that really sustainability has to pretty much be a part of the company's strategic goals.
Exactly, yes.
So based on whatever you level of involvement you want, you have a lot of choice in the matter.
I would add that we really are approaching sustainability from an all-encompassing standpoint. So a lot of people think about sustainability as being natural resource-based, environmental-based, water, electricity, that sort of thing, which is very important to the city. But also we're recognizing the fact that sustainability is not just all about environmental. It's also economic, being as financially efficient as you can. Mm-hmm. And then it's also about social. So how involved are you in the community? Do you take part in community events? Do your employees, you know, have the opportunity to volunteer into the community? That building and that strengthening of community. So all of those are incorporated into this checklist. It's not just about the natural pieces.
And this is based on something that's called the triple bottom line, as I remember.
Exactly.
And it's a well-known model that's used in sustainability academic circles.
Right. And also the triple bottom line is very familiar to businesses as well.
That's true. How do you get businesses involved with the Smart Business Challenge? What do you do?
So essentially, we will contact businesses that we believe would be successful, that maybe we have already identified that are doing things that are sustainable. We have them sign up for an energy audit if they decide that they want to participate in the challenge. And that energy audit is conducted free by the city, and it basically allows them to identify opportunities for cost savings. So becoming aware of how their organization is using energy and ways that they maybe could reduce that. After that, we kind of are a resource to them, kind of filling out those checklists and helping them to identify maybe opportunities that they themselves weren't aware of that we have identified that they're doing.
Do you tend to emphasize the cost savings at the beginning? Because the audit seems to emphasize cost savings.
I'd say, yeah, that's definitely a major pull in pulling businesses into this. As Mary said, time is always a major factor. But when you mention that maybe we can save you money in the long run, that's something that they look at and say, well, maybe this is something that I can spend a little bit of time on. Maybe this is something that I can put some effort into.
Well, I think it's best just to start off with some examples of different companies to see try to give me some companies at different levels that are working on the Smart Business Challenge with you.
So we currently have, I believe, 14 businesses that are participating in the challenge. And ones that we are currently working with to kind of complete the checklist is the Fighting Burrito, which is a really popular restaurant in the campus town area.
I mentioned food would be in all the sessions, so there we go, Fighting Burrito.
Yes, and the Fighting Burrito, we're really excited for them to be a member of the challenge because they are really kind of an innovative restaurant in the things that they're doing already before we even approach them about being a part of the challenge to operate sustainably. So, for example, their fleet of delivery vehicles are all electric. They encourage their employees to walk or bike to work. They even let their customers know that their delivery people may deliver their food on bikes or longboards. So zero emissions. Mm-hmm. So they're doing a lot of things. I think they're really kind of to raise awareness within the organization and to show their clientele that that sustainability is a priority for them.
Interesting. Interesting. I didn't know that about the Fighting Burrito. Drew, do you want to give me an example?
For the Fighting Burrito?
No. Some other
another example.
Another company at a different level.
Well, how about we can talk about Wheatsfield, Green Hills Retirement, who actually achieved
and
platinum
Wheatsfield.
Status.
They both did, yeah.
Green Hills Retirement, okay.
Green Hills Retirement is one of those companies that you wouldn't think of as being a platinum member. You know, it's a big residential.
This is one that's really trying to make sustainability one of its strategic objectives.
Mm-hmm. They're on the top of our list. So they're a big residential company, obviously, but they actually have a HVAC system for their entire building, like most businesses. But they section it off so they can shut it off when needs be, save a great deal of energy over the year. They also have little things within the building, like a sharing library where they can trade off DVDs and books and stuff like that. And it's really just it's really cool to see what they're doing and kind of the non-traditional aspect that they're applying to that residential type business that they have.
Give me some other examples about what Green Hills is doing, say, with its employees to be more sustainable or it's the people that live there.
Sure. Well, they do a newsletter, and so they put information and tips in their newsletter. They also have a suggestion box so that anyone can offer suggestions as to how they feel that they could be more efficient and more effective within their community. They take their residents to a number of different community events and allow them to be engaged in the community in many different ways to help make that connection and mm-hmm. that feeling of belonging and ownership in mm-hmm. the community. So some really very unique things. And I think that's one of the really cool things about the challenge is that all the different businesses that are in it come about sustainability in many different ways. I mean, certainly a majority of them are doing light bulbs and things like that, low flush toilets and things like that. But then they get really creative in some of the different ways. As Ebby mentioned, the zero emission delivery, and Drew mentioned, you know, the real sectioned HVAC and the sharing libraries. And I think a really unique part of the challenge is not only in recognizing businesses, but being able to share different ideas amongst businesses within our community. Hmm. Some of these things we're talking about are no cost, you know, or very low cost.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really unique way to engage your employees and engage your customers in that sustainability awareness.
What do you think are things that businesses can get out of the Smart Balance Business Challenge? Why would you suggest that they should think about participating in this?
I would say that definitely the recognition of what they are doing to operate more sustainably. I think more and more today that is something that is important to everyone. So by demonstrating your organization or your business's commitment to that sustainability, those sustainability objectives, I think that that is going to be something that your customers, your clients appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely. Wheatsfield has a lot of customers that are concerned about sustainability. That's kind of one of their trademarks. So
yeah.
So there are other businesses that probably would benefit by having that type of recognition.
I think, too, that a lot of the businesses that are in the challenge, we wouldn't have necessarily initially thought them to be the businesses to mm-hmm. join. We have, for example, Wildwater Car Wash is in the Smart Business Challenge.
Car Wash does not sound like a sustainable company.
Exactly. Using a lot of water and all those sorts of things. And yet in talking to the business owner, we find out that there's actually an association dedicated to sustainability in the car wash industry that he has joined, and he has really made a commitment. And as we're, you know, looking, we're finalizing, but he definitely is, you know, going to be getting some certifications within the challenge. We have small businesses, one-person business of the frame shop that achieved their silver certification.
Mm-hmm.
So this challenge is meant to offer opportunity to be recognized, as Ebby mentioned, but also different resources and different challenges. Yet for any size business, if you're renting, if you own your business, no matter what type of business you have, it can be applicable to you. And that's what we really want to accomplish with the challenge, is to show that every single business could make a difference and are making differences in their own unique ways.
Interesting. Ebby, what are you learning from your experiences on this project?
Sure. I think prior to me joining this project, the way that I kind of thought about sustainability was very slightly different, but it just kind of changes how I approach sustainability in my own life. I think what I really get out of the challenge, I really like the community outreach aspect of it. By helping businesses and organizations in, you know, this community to start thinking about the city as a whole and what they can do to make Ames a greener place to live and work, I feel like I'm kind of doing my small part to give back to this community.
You're enjoying the community service aspect of it.
Absolutely.
True.
Well, I go to school for business, actually. I'm in marketing, so I'm most likely going to end up in sales. And it's interesting how coming into this internship, I was thinking about, you know, sustainability. That's something that I like. That's something that I've grown up around. It was just something I was interested in. But once I really got into the nitty-gritty of it, it's working and managing these 14 accounts and kind of doing that juggling act and keeping everybody happy, creating those long-lasting customer relationships. And I really think it's something that I'll be able to apply to my my career path down the road. And I think that that's incredibly valuable to me.
Customer management is definitely a part of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, Mary?
Well, I was going to say that Drew and Ebby coming into this internship gave themselves a very impressive and lofty goal, I think, and that was to double the memberships within the Smart Business Challenge during their time as interns this year. So we are very excited to invite more businesses to join the challenge. As you can tell from our discussion today, we've got two very enthusiastic and very resourceful individuals that can help to guide those businesses. And we would love to give them recognition. In joining the challenge, you are put on the City of Ames website. You're put in our resource information so that the community and your customers really know what you're doing. You also get a window cling to say, hey, I took the challenge, and just increase that awareness.
How do businesses contact you if they're interested in participating in this?
Well, I would say generally, first of all, to get on City of Ames website, they can find all the information they want and they can sign up for the challenge right there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right on the front page of the City of Ames website in the upper right-hand corner. It says In the Spotlight and it talks about the Smart Business Challenge.
Okay.
Click on there for more information. Otherwise, they can contact Drew and Ebby directly.
Okay. Quickly, phone numbers?
My phone number would be 847-791-7915.
And I can be reached at 313-980-1065.
Okay. So lots of different ways to contact people. Again, if that went past you too quickly, you can always stream this and get that information via streaming. And we'll also post some information on our website with appropriate links, especially the City of Ames website.
That'd be great. And I certainly can be contacted and get folks to Ebby Andrew as well. And I can be contacted at 515-294-5052.
Okay. We've been talking to Mary Rankin, City of Ames Sustainability Coordinator, Drew Loyacano, and Ebby Brown, student interns with the Smart Business Challenge with the City of Ames. Any final comments?
I would just say that any businesses out there that may be listening to this, if the Smart Business Challenge sounds like something that is feasible for your business and you want to, you know, be recognized for maybe things that you're already doing to promote sustainability, please contact us. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Having you back again, Mary.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
Look forward to next month's visit with you.
Yes, it's going to be very exciting as usual.
Certain it will be. Thank you very much. Okay, I've got some talking to do here. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host, Jim Werbel. I started out the show talking with Seng Kang, a PhD student at ISU who is teaching the Fine Dining Event Management course at ISU, and Shane Brewer, a senior ISU student who is taking the course. You can still make reservations for most meals, but not all, on October the 28th, November the 4th, November 11th, and November 18th. We then talked with Marg Junkin, the owner of Cook's Emporium, and talked to her about our business. I gave a quick fall mushroom report. They sure are tasty. Finally, we had Mary Rankin back for her monthly report on sustainability. Wearing her hat as the City of Ames Sustainability Coordinator, we talked about the City of Ames Smart Business Challenge. And joining her in this segment were Ebby Brown and Drew Loyacano, who are seniors at ISU, helping her with the Smart Business Challenge. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today. You can listen to today's Local Talk show or any of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you'll also find information about our guests, along with relevant links such as the City of Ames website and about today's story. Again, that's khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook, of course, and get updates on all of our show postings in our new in your news feed. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeese today. Thank you again, Jonah, as usual. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard today was Closing the Cottage from the Ames Local Barn Owl Band and from the Oliver Food Glorious Food. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you'd enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, participation as a listener and your generous contributions are do what make KHOI possible for you to listen to regularly. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.